The Hennessy Report from Keystone Partners, a free-flowing conversation with leaders in the HR community, talking about themselves, the industry, and their work. Brought to you in cooperation with NERA, the Northeast Human Resources Association.
Welcome to the Hennessy Report by Keystone Partners. I'm Dave Hennessy, and today's guest is Ann Hargraves, the head of HR at T-Scan Therapeutics. I've known Ann for a long time, and she has a very non-traditional career path, which she talks a little bit about. And as a cancer survivor, she is very passionate about the mission at T-Scan, working for a company, working on life-changing therapies and a more humane way and effective way of treating cancer. They're in phase one trials, and they've had a lot of things to be excited about. They don't publicize their values to the outside world, but we get a little sense of it from Anne. She gives a couple examples and analogies about really understanding people's motivations before you take action or jump to conclusions. They've been on the top places to work 2 years in a row. And she also talks about performance reviews and how they look at it that might be a little bit different than some other organizations. You'll enjoy this discussion with Anne. Next up on the podcast is the head of HR for Amundi Asset Management US, Nancy Follin. And now our conversation with Anne Hargraves. Anne, it's so great to have you finally on the podcast because you were here at the beginning when we were just thinking of this idea of starting a podcast, and I remember you helping me prepare for the very first guests. So welcome to the Hennessy Report by Keystone. Well,
thank you, Dave. It's very exciting to be here. It feels like a full circle moment.
Exactly. I think at that point, you had left Keurig, you were doing your own HR consulting with different companies, and now you're ahead of HR again at T-Scan. So great having you. And we start every podcast with asking the same question. What's an early life moment that, as you look back on it now, was an inflection point for your career, for your life?
That's always a really good question because it depends on how far back you want to go into early life. And I honestly thought about two different things. One, I went really early and just remembered myself in this tiny little apartment down in the downtown area of Lynn, when I pulled all the neighborhood kids together. And every time we all quote unquote played, I decided we would play school and I would be the teacher, or we would be dancers and I would be the instructor. And I could give you lots and lots of more examples of that. But I think it was very clear at an early age that I wanted to be running things. So that may have figured out how I got up to the level anyways. But yep. When it comes to human resources, I really go back to my first full-time job right out of college. And while I learned an awful lot at that job, and this was way before my second act in human resources, because I didn't start out there. I've not been in human resources for even half of my career at this point. But I was in an environment, not knowing that this was the environment I was in because it was the first one, but it was very unhealthy. And while I learned a lot and worked very hard, I realized there were a lot of pressures on me and the rest of the staff that we really didn't need to have, and it did not bring out the best in ourselves. And that's why my second act went on to be in human resources, because I realized that was a place I could actually make a difference.
That's great. Yeah. It's when you're in those moments, sometimes you don't know how dysfunctional they are, right? Until you get some outside perspective.
I had no idea, Dave, for many, many, many years. I'm almost embarrassed to say how many. but here we are now. All's well that ends well.
Well, it's been great watching your career grow. And now you're at T-Scan, as we mentioned. And tell us a little bit about T-Scan, about the science and what your mission is.
You know, it's really interesting because I'd said, and I may have said it to you many times, when I finally went out as a consultant, which had been my dream, that I would never take a full-time job again. And here I am in a full-time job. But what's really amazing about T-Scan, outside of the culture and the people that I'm sure we will get to and you'll dig deep into, is the mission of the company. As a cancer survivor myself, being able to find myself at a company that is working on life-changing therapies for patients and their families, and knowing that patients and their families are in the mission, that was a real turning point for me. We have the best and the brightest here working on therapies that will change the lives of patients that really don't have another choice, but also to go through humane therapy and give them all of these opportunities in life that they deserve to have, but that their families deserve to have them there for. It was really exciting for me.
That's great. That's great. You can be doing something you're so passionate about. Can you describe a little bit in layman's terms, a little bit about the science piece at TCM?
I would like to think I can, but let's see.
I know you can do it better than me. So.
Yeah, no. My VP of IR will probably come after me for this one. But so T cells is something, those are things that we have in our body that really drive the immune system. And most patients have to go through some pretty invasive therapies, some pretty tough therapies. I went through some tough therapies myself. And what we do is we engineer T cells and put them back into the patient and allow them to have a more natural and a more humane way of trying to treat the cancer, but most importantly, a more effective way of treating the cancer. So those T cells are killer cells. They're going in there to kill. And I've never thought as an HR professional, I'd be someplace where we are promoting killing, but we are. In fact, our softball team are the killer tees, and we're really proud of that. So we're out there killing cancer cells one at a time, and hopefully in a way that can be, it's a proprietary method as well, and something that we only do here at T-Scan. And it's safer and it's more effective. And we have gone into our phase one trials and had very promising results. So we're excited about what that will mean for the way we treat cancer all over the world one day.
That is great. Great work, Anne, that you're all doing. So let's talk about some HR things. You told me that you don't publicize the values to the outside world. They're not on the website, the stated values. Can you explain a little bit of the rationale for that?
You know, you always hear you don't want values to be something that are up on the wall. And in our almost 5 years or just going over 5 years of business now, they were just put up on the wall for the first time ever in a fairly obscure spot in our new building. And that's the only place they are. And it just happened less than a year ago. And there's a very good reason for that. And it's because it's something we live and breathe. It's not something we necessarily talk about. It's something we do. But we don't put them out on the website because we don't want candidates to artificially integrate them into answers. Mm-hmm. They don't have to use the words of our values. They don't even have to talk about our values. It just has to feel natural to them. We want to know who they are as people, and not just what we're looking for, but what kind of environment they're looking for. And when you put those words out there, people feel like they have to somehow weave them into their answers. And I not only, you know, don't get a chance to really see who they are, but they don't use the right answers or their real answers either, because they're trying so hard to back into something. So right. I just think we get more of the real person when we don't do that.
That's great. So how are the values revealed to the people you're trying to attract? And once they're onboarding, how do the values become permeated throughout the organization?
We don't keep them a secret from candidates forever. We definitely reveal them prior to making an offer to them, because it is about them getting to know who we are as well. And they need to feel good to them. So enable to do that two-way selection process. We make sure we reveal them pretty early, hold them close to the vest, you know, in the beginning, and then we reveal those. And they walk into day one. I always tell people, when you walk through the halls of T-Scan, you'll feel them. We won't need to tell you what they are. You'll feel them. But we do indeed tell you what they are. And we do integrate them into absolutely everything we do, from interview questions to we're in the middle of performance review season right now. Every HR professional's dream time of year, right?
Yeah,
HR hurricane season. I didn't coin that, but I absolutely have adopted it.
What did you say that? Say that one more time.
Oh, HR hurricane season is what we call this. Right. And, you know, between performance reviews and compensation reviews and promotion reviews and comp committees and board meetings and everything else that we're doing, open enrollment, throw in a few other major things. And that's what we're doing right now. But We have, if you are an individual contributor at T-Scan, 50% of your review is based on your goals, so your functional performance, and 50% is based on your values. So it's the what you do and how you do it, equally important at T-Scan. And if you start there, everything else you do, whether it's our recognition program, whether it's communications or events or pretty much everything we do, they're in the newsletter, they are in our diversity programs, they're everywhere. But they come out naturally because it's part of who we are. So you don't have to artificially put them into anything. They're already there.
Right. So you're really measuring the behaviors that reflect the values, it sounds like, in these.
We really do. We really do. And we've outlined those behaviors, you know, as, you know, every value has a behavior that is positive and a behavior that could be negative. And I will use something that maybe isn't a T-Scan value as an example in case we have any potential candidates out there. But if you take passion is an absolutely wonderful thing, but it can overtake you. And sometimes it gives you tunnel vision, or it could be something that drives you to something fairly great. So anything, and we all have those values. Our competencies can be used positively or negatively. So we've outlined those with all of our values, so you know whether you're using the value the way we've hoped that you would use it, and maybe not in a way that isn't beneficial to the people around you.
Excellent. Let's talk about leadership. How would you describe leadership culture at T-Scan, and how do you build it?
Well, every time I would go into a company as a consultant, the first thing people would want to know is what their culture was like and how employees would explain the culture. And I almost always had my own little system where I would go in and start with interviewing all of the employees of the company. And then I would go into the leadership team and say, okay, here's how they described you. And they would always say, well, we wanted to know how they described the culture. I said, exactly. Let's see if this sounds like you. And every time we would describe the culture, you were absolutely describing the personality of that leadership team. So it is for sure something that every single person in your company needs to embody and demonstrate. But if it doesn't start with the top, it doesn't start at all. And our leadership team is phenomenal here. It is one of the big reasons I came here. And I mean, our CEO is one of the first people dressed up on a mini golf team with a funny name and being competitive. Our leadership team shows up for everything. They really show up for everything. They are just as excited to go to an employee event with 10 people as they are to go an employee event with 150 people. They stand up, give talks or speeches without a script. They do it from the head and from the heart. They're as real as they can be. They walk through the halls. You would never know who our leaders were when you walk through the halls, other than which office they might go into, because they just mix in with everybody else. We're just nice to each other. We're honest. We push hard. We expect a lot of others, but we accept a lot of ourselves. So if you start there, everything else becomes a lot easier.
That's a really great insight, and about how when you went into other companies as a consultant, they said, let's talk about, find out what's going on with the culture here. Like, do a cultural assessment, and you always would point to them. It's you, right?
It 100% is every time.
Yeah, that's great. All right. Congratulations. You won the Boston Globe Best Places to Work. Was that it? How was that for, what kind of reaction did you get from staff and the rest of the team?
So thank you. We always say those are the HR Oscars. So we were very excited to accept that award, have lots of people to thank, and probably would have gotten the music sending us off of the stage by the time we finished that. And but it is very exciting for us to be able to win the Top Places to Work 2 years in a row is very, very exciting, especially as this tiny little biotech. I know we fall into the midsize, right? But we're 150 people. And when I started here almost 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago, there were 25 people. So to be even in the midsize at this point in such a crazy industry here, highly competitive, combustible industry in some ways, and to be able to make it twice. But I will tell you, probably the proudest moment, Winning feels amazing. It really does. And I promise I'm not going to say it felt good just to be nominated because I wanted to win. I definitely wanted us to win. That said, when that particular award comes from your own employees, right? So our employees took this survey, and 90% of our employees took the survey. That in itself is a really phenomenal engagement measure, right? That's a metric on its own. But then when we got the score, we scored a 90 in engagement. So to be able to win and to be able to go and celebrate, and you know, it was a really wonderful night. But to come back and know that those were your numbers and that's how engaged people are, it's really a special thing.
That's great. You talked about this industry too, and the life sciences biotech industry. One, you're right, you know, you're 150, that's pretty big biotech, right? Most of them are under 100, under 50 employees, for crying out loud, right? So 150 is actually a big biotech, or midsize, as you said. But there's been a lot of change in life sciences and biotech over the last year and a half. And before that, there was a tremendous amount of growth. And some of the things we've seen is really a lot of competition for talent, right? And wage inflation and title inflation and ego inflation. And I just thought I'd like to get your more of an insight from you on those kinds of issues, the dynamics you've seen and the expectations of talent in the sector in general.
That was very, very challenging. We were already in an industry that was competitive in an area of the country that's extremely competitive. Here we are over in Waltham. We're not in Cambridge. We're not in Boston. So we already have a couple of things that we need to deal with in terms of pulling people in from other companies and being competitive. And then COVID hit, the pandemic hit. And I very naively thought, well, whoo, this might help us. And the complete opposite happened. It spiraled in a matter of a week. And I don't know what happened, but we went from 100% offer acceptance to 25%. And we had people that were getting offers $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 more than what we were offering. Yeah. And these were not at executive levels. These were, you know, RA and scientist level. And it became very difficult. And we took a probably off the beaten path philosophy. It wasn't what everyone else was doing. And we decided to hold true and to not inflate our compensation. We did not inflate our titles. We kept to our career ladder. We kept to our Radfords. And we let some really good candidates go. But here was our strategy. Our strategy was, this is a moment in time. This is something that's not sustainable. And there are lots of biotechs out there, and I hope many of them made it, but we all know now many of them did not, that were throwing money at talent, probably because they had to, or it was a little easier and they needed the time, right? They needed to move fast to be able to get results, to get funding. Right. And we stayed slow and steady, and we were honest with candidates. We were honest with our own employees who were getting, you know, tapped on the shoulder on a daily basis, because that's just as much. It's one thing to attract a candidate. It's another thing to hold on to the talent that has the tribal knowledge here already. And that was that was a real risk. But we just kept talking to people, and we were honest with people and said, we are going to be fiscally responsible. We have already earmarked this money to take us to a certain point in time. We need to raise money. We need to compete with what else is out there. We know what our marching orders are. And what I can tell you is, if you come here or if you stay here, we will take good care of people as it makes sense, as you're able to demonstrate talent and as we have the funds. But one thing I can tell you is, this is one of the ways we'll make sure we are here a year from now or 2 years from now or 3 years from now, and you're not job hopping. Right. So here we are, these, you know, years later, we have not had one layoff. We continue to hire. And we're able to pay a pretty good wage. We do a lot of increases in promotions every single year. We pay bonuses. We refresh equity. And when you look at our press releases, when you look at what we've been able to do as a company and where we might go, your resume is looking pretty great right now, too. So yeah. I'm really thankful for the people that understood that. And honestly, the ones that were chasing the money, I wish them luck, but this probably wasn't the right place for them anyways. We're too mission focused for that.
Really interesting. You know, the business we're in, of course, and we're doing on half of our businesses outplacement career transition services. And we see a lot of candidates coming from the biotechs who have seen a lot of churn, where they've been laid off at more than one biotech. And they're saying some of the things that you're talking about, that I want more security when I get my next role. You know, I really hope that I'm not in another situation like this soon. So it's something that I know the talent pool is thinking about more of now as well.
And we think about that too, because when you're in a company or in an industry where it's really dynamic, it's fast moving and things change all the time, having tribal knowledge, having people who have been through those different phases with you is really important. To me, it's a competitive advantage, which is why we're so good to people when they walk in the door. And compensation and total rewards is only one part of that. The value set, the respect that you show people, the truths that you tell, the camaraderie, right? The friends that you make at work, the opportunity you get to do that. Everything that we do from HR supports all of those things. And, you know, right now, at any point between 3 years ago and today, to have a 20 to 30% turnover rate is fairly standard in this industry. Mm-hmm. And we just closed our year with 12%.
Wow, that's congratulations. That's awesome.
Fantastic for the number of people we have here.
And you and I have talked about this in many of our conversations about, you know, and you've talked about your style is one that you're willing to talk to people about something that might be hard for them to hear, but they need to hear. And I just want to open up the topic about conflict. I know it's a passion of yours, and how do you approach it? How do you instill that in your team and in your organization, the approach to conflict?
I do love conflict, Dave, and it's not something you hear a lot of people say. And I used to teach a course on conflict, and it has the big I heart conflict. But then, you know, what faded in after that was better than the consequences of none. So when it comes to conflict, one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle and trying to resolve it is really understanding perspective. And we have classes here on conflict resolution, communication, but probably one of the best places to start is our respectful workplace session, where we talk about the way to give respect is to not just do unto others. That's the golden rule. My platinum rule is you don't do as you would like done to you. You do as they would like done to them, right? But to be able to know what that is to understand somebody else's perspective and where they're coming from. An example that I like to use, it's probably one of my famous examples. At this point, anybody who's taken my training has overheard this example. So hopefully we have some new listeners, because I will share it with you now. And it's my traffic analogy. So if you, for a moment, close your eyes and, well, don't close your eyes while you're driving, but just while you're thinking about the driving. Right? You are in the passing lane and you're driving along the highway. And for those local folks, let's say 128, because now we really get the feeling that we're in that passing lane. We're going 75, maybe 80, wink, wink, maybe a little more. And we're cruising along trying to get where we need to be. And lo and behold, out of nowhere, another car comes from the middle lane and cuts you off. What is the very first thing that you do?
And get angry. Yeah.
You get angry, right? So there are lots of things that people do. None of them are very respectful, by the way, which is why this is fun and respectful workplace. But we tend to maybe call them a name. We raise our voices. We yell. We may give them some hand gestures. We may
maybe a beep of a horn or a flashing lights, you know, all sorts of things.
A horn is a classic. It's a classic. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that one up. If we're feeling really aggressive that day, we may ride their butt a little bit. But here's my personal favorite. We may try to also then pass them and cut them off, right? Because we want to make sure we're retaliating. This is usually my example of how we naturally retaliate, which is all true. And then you cut them off. But my very personal favorite is while we're about to cut them off, we stop beside them and we look in the window and we make a face, right? We want them to see us. It's a phenomenon in human behavior. So, okay, so the retaliation part aside, this person going along, you felt that someone cut you off. Therefore, you wanted to make sure you had your comeuppance. right? So now we're going to move away from that analogy, and now we're going to back to a new one. And you are now in your car in the middle lane of 128. Anybody ever been boxed in on 128 in the middle lane? I know I have many, many, many times this morning on my way. And you're going along, and there's someone in front of you going about 50. And that's wonderful for the on-off lane, but not the middle lane, right? So I want to move over to the passing lane, but the darn people over there are going about 80, 85 on a good day. And I can't get in because I just can't get over there going 50 miles an hour. So I finally see my shot and I move over. And I'm really excited because I finally made it over to the passing lane. But this guy behind me starts beeping, flipping me off, calling me names, riding my butt. And now he's trying to pass me again. So what might I do? I might slow down a little bit. I'm going to wave my hand up and say, hi, just try to aggravate them. And it's a really interesting phenomenon how these two people, and dare I say they're not even people because you have no idea who's in the car. It's really two inanimate objects. It is not at all personal, but we are making it as personal as can be. Neither of those decisions had anything to do with the other person because we didn't even know who that other person was. It was strictly and solely from my own motivation and where I wanted to be and what I wanted to do and assessing what was around me. And it's, you know, a lengthy and a wordy analogy, but I think it perfectly suits trying to figure out other people's motivations and how personal we tend to think and how we immediately retaliate and get defensive and want to have a comeuppance in either one of those situations.
Right.
And at the end of the day, you are just changing lanes. When there's no conflict, there's no innovation. When there's no conflict, it means people are either apathetic, disengaged, or afraid, right? Because if you're bringing in diverse people and diverse talent, they are going to disagree. And that's ultimately what conflict is. And I think we're pretty good at it. I think conflict is an interesting thing, right? A lot of people think that in order to resolve conflict, that somebody had to win and somebody had to lose. Hmm. Nobody wants to lose. Nobody likes to lose. I don't like to lose. I'm sure you guys don't like to lose, right? So we try to make sure there are no losers in conflict. And when it comes to resolving it, it is not about just getting to the answer. That is something that should be a byproduct of conflict resolution, right? The answer is a byproduct. Conflict resolution really is about talking and listening, asking questions, not even just listening, asking questions, looking for clarity, understanding the perspective. And what am I missing? What am I missing? If I don't see what you see, what am I missing? And at the end, you know, one person may decide that they're going to go in another direction, or hopefully they both decide they'll go in another direction. But either way, if you resolve it really well in the moment with a lot of conversation and perspective analysis, dare I say analysis, right? Not just understanding, analyzing that perspective a little bit, you not only resolve this conflict in a better way, but you're likely to have less of them moving forward because you start to understand how other people think and why they were doing things. And you can start to assume positive intent moving forward. And it does seem to lessen the conflict. There always is some, but there isn't a lot here. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't been a lot in most of the places that I've walked into. Well, maybe when I got there, but definitely not when we left.
How do you start to change the behavior around conflict? Like maybe there was when you first got to T-Scan, you noticed some behaviors that you wanted to shift. How do you start to influence that? Maybe it doesn't have to be a T-Scan. Just I was wondering what kind of behaviors, what kind of things you do to right that ship.
It, you know, most of it is openness and trust, quite honestly. And it sounds simplistic, but it is simplistic to explain, very complex in its execution, right? Because it hits a lot of sensitivity points. And most people are afraid to trust other people. But when every single time I walked into a consulting engagement, it was almost always because people weren't getting along. And the company was growing and people had different ideas about which way that should go or how they fit in or just their ways of working. And honestly, I go right to culture. I go right to what do you see? Ask everybody really clearly and openly, what do you see? What do you think the mission of this company is? What do you think the values are? What do you think they're doing really well? What were things that surprised you from what you thought you were getting into to what you actually got into? And to hear how many of those answers might be positive or might be negative is always interesting to me. Yeah. And then sharing that not only with the leadership team, but then having the leadership team's answer shared with everybody else and doing it as a readout of here are the results of what we found and here's what we're doing really well as a company and here's what we're not doing really well as a company. The other thing I think is very important and I'm a very big fan of is insights discovery or any other type of assessment that's easy for people to use. But when you can open up the conversation on why we speak to each other differently or why we think differently or why we put value on things at different weights, then you can start opening up that conversation and making it less personal. So if you know insights discovery, I mean, I'm very red, yellow, and we'll just say my husband may be the exact opposite and he's blue, green, because this party trick you can use at home. But, you know, I know that when I talk to my husband, he wants to talk about a lot of details and go slower. And I want to be, he says, I'm a nutshell person. I want it as fast and quick as you can give it to me because I have 25 other things I have to do in the next 30 minutes. So we think differently. But instead of saying, you do this, or I don't like when you do this, or, hey, I may be exhibiting something that's not so rosy right now, I can say, oops, sorry, that was very red of me. Okay, your blue is showing. And we open it up in a funny way so that you can have the conversation and you can address those differences right away. Right. And that's once you start opening up conversation and giving people shared language and taking the personal out of it, it changes the dynamic. And I could go back into so many of the companies that I've worked with, including T-Scan, where people are still using that today, whether they're taking the class on insights or not. They're talking about it, they're using it, and that is now their language.
Right.
And it gets you through conflict and it gets you through differences really right. quickly.
That's great. What do you focus on development of managers? Are there certain moments on managers and leaders that you're looking to provide them some support? We're noticing that in our work with leadership development, we did some research in this area, that the peanut butter spread, everybody gets development, and, you know, everybody gets coaching, everybody gets training. That's kind of passé. And the shift is more to finding places where people need support to get to the next level, or they're coming in from the outside and they need some onboarding leadership support. What's your approach with leadership development, management development at T-Scan?
Well, I think the approach should be the same as you apply to everybody else in the company. Everyone comes in at a different level with a different background, with different experiences, different natural abilities, right? So yes, we absolutely put courses out and say, here is what you can learn from a classroom perspective and go take as many as you want. But if you follow the 10-70-20 learning plan, right, we know that's 10%. So you can give that 10% to everybody. It doesn't matter. It's an opportunity. What they do with it in that 70 is really where the difference comes in. And we have maybe different from a lot of other organizations and right or wrong, we stay very close to our talent at every level. We do talent reviews. We sit and talk to leaders about what performance reviews are going to look like. We look at it at mid-year and they come in and it's a revolving door. And we talk about people all the time and where they are and what they need. So that 70 is not just creating opportunities for people to practice and giving them that honest feedback on what they did well and what they didn't and what they can use for help. If someone asks me for coaching, they're getting it. But I don't have a litany that I go through with people. I have a few questions that I ask. Can we identify what they want to work on? What's most impactful for them to actually work on? I want to be a wonderful singer one day. It's not going to happen. And it's really not going to help my career. So I can practice all day long. It's not a natural talent, nor is it going to be beneficial to me in the future. So we dig down with everybody to find out what those things are. What are you most motivated to learn and what will be meaningful to you and those around you? And then in the practice opportunities, that's where we really try to specialize, right, and customize what those development opportunities are going to be. And to let people shadow and let people watch other people do things that only come around once every 6 months or especially in the HR world, right? We're having an involuntary termination. Come on and sit in. Will it be a little awkward? Sure. But how else will you learn how to do this the right way?
Right. The application is so important. Practice. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the things that we always do on this podcast is we have the NERA question of the podcast. And Anne, you have always been a big supporter of NERA and presenter, and you always bring your team to the conference. And I love it. You you and your team are always out there networking and going to events together. And I really look forward to meeting with all of you and having fun there. So a couple questions. One, talk a little bit about your team, because I think you and how you build your HR team, because you have a great group and a great camaraderie on your HR team.
I really do. I have to say, I always feel like when I talk about my team, I'm an actor getting up on stage saying I'm working with the best cast I've ever worked with. And I really am. I feel like every place I've been, I've had this wonderful team, but they seem to get better and better. And I don't know if they're getting better or I'm getting better. Hopefully we're both getting better at this. But I do have an incredible team. And a lot of people would say I have a fairly junior team. When you look around, I have four people on my team and none of them have been doing this for 20 years. And we don't have a director level on the HR team. There's me. And then we have two managers and two non-managers. So I've had many people come and say, you are creating so much more work for yourself. And I always say, no. I'm willing to reach backwards a little bit to help out, to give them the opportunity to reach forward and keep moving that brass ring a little bit ahead and giving them those opportunities. And what I have found is instead of people being resentful of there being more work for them, they're very excited and appreciative of the opportunities to be able to reach forward and to be able to be included. You know, the difference is we don't just give them director level work. I don't just give the non-managers manager level work. They're allowed in the room, you know. So Nicole, our comp and Ben manager, she's in the room for comp committee, and she knows what the executive compensation looks like. April, if we're having a really complicated and issue with a legal issue, she's in the room. She's talking to the attorney. She's talking to the whoever is involved, whether it's the employee, whether it's somebody on the other side. They don't shy away from those things. But here's the key. If you allow people to stretch like that, if you give them those opportunities that create an awful lot of risk, the risk is mine. The risk is not theirs. If they fall, if they fail, nobody knows but me. And I'm the first one taking accountability for that to anybody outside. They certainly will hear about it from me because that would be the best learning experience they're going to get. And not giving them that would be a real travesty to their development. But to anybody else on the outside, you'll never know it. Nobody in this company will ever know it. And people are very appreciative and work really hard when they have those opportunities. And my team really, to be able to win Top Places to Work and have a 12% turnover rate and have a 90% engagement rate and the number of events and the new programs and the new processes we have in place and new technology that we've put in place, it's pretty tight. So people may argue that the team isn't senior enough. I'd argue that this is the only way to go. And the proof is in the results.
Well, since we brought up NERA, we're going to bring in Megan Mandina, who always asks the NERA question of the podcast. And she has one for you right now. Megan.
So I recently had a friend talking to me, telling me that HR is not on their side. And they're not on employees in their company's side. And what advice would you give to an HR professional dealing with that, or how can they make sure that their employees know that there is trust and there is that they are on their company's side?
That is a really wonderful question because it goes back to the age old, the jokes that people make about human remains and HR is just there to be the police or the principal. And it's something that we've been trying to change for a long time. probably one of the best compliments of my professional life are people saying, wow, I really love HR. I didn't know HR was like this. I've been in so many other companies where we're invited to everything. We are part of the team. And it goes back to what we were talking about with trust and being honest. It's okay to be wrong sometimes. It's okay to have another opinion and not go with your own, even if you still think it's the better answer. It's okay to find gray area. Legal will tell you sometimes they wish it wasn't so gray all the time, but I like gray area, and it's a little bit more of my brand. We put employee handbooks and policies and everything in place to protect people. But at any point you're talking to someone and it's not working for them, it's really not protecting them. It's really not protecting the company either. So we like to listen to what's going on with people. We tell everyone, if you're a manager, if you're a non-manager, it doesn't matter if your issue is with another employee, with your boss, with me, it could be with anyone. Come and talk to us about it. We're not the judge and jury. We're not making notes that are going in anyone's file. We're just talking about it and trying to share some of our experience and hopefully give you some good advice or some tips and tricks on how to have more effective conversations with people. And know that everybody has a good day. Everybody has a bad day. Sometimes we have a bad week or a bad month, or we're stressed and we're showing the not so wonderful sides of ourselves, or somebody misread you and it's just something a conversation might help with. And if we're willing to admit when we're wrong or we've had a bad day or we haven't treated somebody as well as we would like to, and we all do that, and anybody who says that we don't really is not very self-aware, and they're not creating that kind of trust and open environment to have those conversations. So talk openly, have fun, lighten up a little bit, and really listen to what people are saying and be willing to make a change when a change needs to be made. When it can't be made, explain why it can't be made and be comfortable with a little bit of discomfort sometimes. That's what life is.
Thank
All
you.
Right. We have our speed round now. We're going to wind down this podcast, Anne. So
I've been slowing down, Dave. So I'm excited for the speed round.
So if you could give some advice to your 25 or 30 year old self, dear Anne, what would you write?
Oh, that's a really young girl, Dave. This was like 5 years ago, right? Okay. So no, it was much more than that. But it's interesting because I wasn't in human resources back then, and I have some really good advice to that poor girl who was working to the bone and learning a lot and probably should. I would say keep working hard. That is one of the most important things you can do. But don't work so hard that you miss the most important things that are going on in your life. And I did miss a lot of really important things because I worked too hard. You know, you don't have to be the first person in and the last person out to be able to be good at something. But more importantly is you want to grow and develop, but that doesn't mean you have to be the boss. Don't ever be a boss. And I was a bad, bad boss. I was a terrible boss. I felt like I was wearing somebody else's clothes and going in and being a bad actor. And I've realized over the years that you don't grow unless you are good to people, that being the boss is not growth. Being promoted is not growth. The only way you get elevated is through other people. So be really good to them along the way.
That's awesome. And something you don't want to leave undone 5-10 years from now. What's something that you said, I got to get this accomplished?
Other than the book I still haven't written, but let's go back to something that's a little more broad-based here. What I don't want to leave undone is there's still so much work to do with equity and equality. And whether it is a woman, whether it's a minority, or just a shy man for that matter, anybody who's not actually standing up for themselves and getting everything that they deserve, that's what I don't want to leave undone. I watch so many quiet people get passed by, or so many people, sometimes we hold ourselves back. And to be able to empower everyone to advocate for themselves, be self-aware as well. You know, not everybody's going to be the CEO one day. But to have a healthy and happy life and let all of the gifts that you have bring you as far as you can.
Great. Anne, your work week or your weekend, all of a sudden, a ton of time just opens up on your calendar. Something gets canceled and you have many hours. It could be a weekday, work week, or a weekend. What do you do with that time?
All right. Well, hopefully I'm hopping on a plane somewhere. I have the travel bug. And if I'm really lucky, a concert while I'm there, because I love a concert. I go to lots of them.
What's your favorite concert, favorite artist, or the most recent one?
Okay. There can be no favorites because my musical interest is so varied. I wouldn't even know where to start. But I have two. Can I choose two?
Allow it.
I have to choose two. I had one, but in the back of my mind, there's another one that was just too special to not choose. So I'm going to go with Jelly Roll. And Jelly Roll is my first, but not, I do love Jelly Roll. That doesn't really track with my personality if you meet me, but he was pretty good. I won't tell you all the things we were yelling and screaming at the concert, but why it was so great was I was there with my 19-year-old son. And if you asked me 19 years ago when I had that little baby, if I thought he would want to hang out with his mom at a Jelly Roll concert 19 years later, I would have been shocked to say yes. So that one for sure. But I have to say, I was talked into this by a friend to go see the Pink concert. And I thought, I like Pink, but okay. And boy, did I get an education. She was phenomenal, right? Every song sounds better in concert anyways. And I had no idea how many anthems she actually had. So that was pretty exciting. But to watch her on stage, and it was her first time playing Fenway, so I thought it was pretty phenomenal. She was strong physically, mentally. She just was so strong. She had presence. She was unbelievably talented, but she was also humble. She was also gracious. And she was an incredible entertainer. She kept talking about how grateful she was to be there. So you looked at somebody up on the stage who thought they've mastered their craft. They're so good at this. They're literally along wires through the entire arena without a net. That's somebody who's unbelievably brave. Yet she kept talking about these really humbling moments and how grateful she was and how many people in her family that had passed on that she'd wished had seen her make it to that point. I have to say, it was one of the best concerts I've ever been to.
Well, you know, you are, I think, the second guest of ours in the last two or three who had mentioned this. Megan, who was it? Somebody else just, I can't remember. But Anne, thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast. It was a long wind up, 7 years ago. We sat down and started this discussion. And so thank you so much for helping us build it to what it was today. And now here you are as a guest. Thank you.
Well, I can't thank you enough for having me. A lot of people around me know that my favorite number is 7. So I'm going to say that this was meant to be. It was worth the wait. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Anne.
Thank you for listening to the Hennessy Report from Keystone Partners. Be sure to subscribe to listen to all of our conversations with leaders in HR. Go to keystonepartners.com and click on the podcast button.